Hi, this is PV People. I'm Ben Figgis. First of all, apologies for the long delay between successive episodes. It's been a busy few months, but this one is hopefully very much worth the wait. It's a really interesting and fun interview with Gerhard Mutter. Gerhard is one of the most knowledgeable people I've ever met about PV plant operation, monitoring, and analytics. And he's got decades of very hands-on, real-world experience and stories to tell about the ins and outs of PV plant monitoring. And I'll give you a heads up, they involve snakes. So I hope you enjoy the podcast. It was recorded in October 2023. And if you'd like to get in contact, you can send me an email at contact@pvpeople.org. Hi, Gerhard. How are you?
Hi, I'm fine.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for doing the interview. The reason why I wanted to interview you is you know more than anyone I ever met about how to run a PV plant and the problems that can occur and how to detect the problems. So I guess maybe to start, could you explain how you got into this area?
Yeah, originally I'm an automotive engineer, and I started during my education to take care about computer, and then I did 25 years software development. And we made then nice pictures of interior design. And based on this, we get always more complex and complex and complex. And the final stage was then that we were semi-automatically playing, let's say Lego playing, completing any equipment that you can think about it. And one of these clients was from Solar Thermal, creating a solar collector, a facade collector, and doing all the heavy calculations in the background with all the hydraulic calculation, the thermal, and we generated it by a picture of the house, entering some measurement, and then you got the whole list of pieces that you need for the production. And the friend of this guy said, when someone wants to do anything else but computing, he should come to me. And that was Austrian's second largest solar company. And I was then in trouble with my partner. I had to bring in a partner in the software company. And after 2 years, we said, okay, this is not the real life. We both do not fit really perfect together. So I got my shares out and changed to the renewable energies as a product manager and chief developer of the Solar Thermal company. And the Solar Thermal company was then in parallel doing also PV. And as I was not one of the plumbers, I had no fear of electricity, because my father and my grandfather were electrician. So
What did you train as?
Technical mathematics.
Okay.
I started technical mathematics, but I have a master in renewable energies.
Okay. When did you join the company doing solar thermal and PV? What year was that approximately?
2007, 2008, around that. Then I was 2 or 3 years a product manager and chief developer for all this renewable stuff, really all renewables from heat pump through PV systems, but for private use, so the small ones.
When you say private use, you mean residential or
small? Residential, yeah. 10 models on the rooftops and an inverter and the cables and the fire. And the switch for the fire brigade, and that's it. Yeah.
Right. So you were getting up on the roof at all, or you had other people doing
it? I climbed on roofs, but just for being not too far from that, what I'm designing. Yeah. But for the clients, we made 200 or 300 rooftops within the first year. Yeah. Wow. So that was nice. And then the business went down because Austria stopped the subsidy on solar thermal, also on PV, but PV was no subsidy up to this time. Then the company was bought by a plastic producer and stopped the development. And I got then the offer of Austria's largest solar company taking over the development, and I took this over. And
company name, sorry, just for the record.
The company name is Sonnenkraft. I was at the development company called General Solar.
Okay.
And yeah, the business went down more and more. Before, I was also managing the first megawatt plant in Austria on PV, and I was responsible for the modules, for 40% of the modules, of the main supplier from the modules. That was my first contact to really utility scale PV. 1 megawatt today, everyone is laughing, but 10 years ago, it was a big one. Yeah. But the market went down and down. And during this time, I got then the offer of a friend of mine to take care, doing a technical due diligence on a megawatt plant in Ukraine for an oligarch to decide to install a bit more. And this bit more were than 700 megawatt, located 350 megawatt at the island of Crimea and 350 megawatt in the Odessa region.
Wait, so just to pause. So you're saying there was 350 plus 350 megawatts in Crimea back around 2010?
2011.
2012.
Wow.
I didn't know that.
I was responsible for the world's largest PV plant from the owner's side. It was at this time the plant Perovo. It's near Simferopol Airport in the middle of Crimea, and it was at this time 132 megawatt.
Oh my gosh, are they still operating? Do you know if they're they've survived?
No, the plants at Crimea, they stopped being serviced after 2014 when the Russian came and occupied Crimea.
Interesting. Okay.
And the other plants went back to the Chinese module supplier, but I did from Vienna with my team the O&M on taking the monitoring data and squeezing out of the monitoring data everything that I could see, because the plants were really hard to manage. Situations like you have now in India or so. The next biggest airport is 5 hours per car away from the plant itself. The guys in the plant are telling you whatever they want, because they know you cannot be here within 10 minutes and tell them that there's something wrong. But I could see everything from the monitoring system. And that was really amazing, because I developed at this time the first analytics. We had problems, for instance, the logbooks were always not correct. I can tell you stories where the guys, for instance, on Friday afternoon had a breakdown of a 2 megawatt inverter station, and in the logbook was it written on Tuesday of the following week at 10 in the morning. And at 11:30, what a miracle, problem solved, because it was only one switch to change, but nobody had motivation to go out. Yeah. And I double checked this then in the monitoring system and told the guys they shouldn't tell such a shit to me.
So who were you working for? So who was paying your salary?
The salary was paid by an Austrian company who was indirect the owner. But I was the head of the operations, and my job title was at this time technical director. And it was a very funny situation. We had only on laziness in the first year, we had 4.5% losses of the annual production. Yeah, that's really significant. Yeah. And we reduced this within 2 years by just giving the guys positive motivation to run it down to 0.1%.
Okay, from 4.5%.
You can see quite easily, because there is, if you have a plant with 80 inverters and then there are 3 inverters not running, you can quite estimate quite clear during the breakdown what would have been the production.
I see. So these are more or less the inverters being down.
Inverters? No, it was not only inverters. Mm. It was 4.5% were at inverter and combiner level. So fuses, blown diodes and all that stuff. Yeah. We had the luck on string monitoring, so we could really react within half an hour.
Okay.
We optimized here crazy contracts. Like, can you imagine someone invented a contract on PV with 24/7 service? Which is not necessary, because during the night, you have not to expect that you have any inverter breakdown, or at least you cannot see it. Yeah. giving them the feeling that they cannot hide anything because it is Eastern Europe and they fuck you whenever they can. That is, I've seen similar things in India, but Eastern Europe is even stronger. They don't tell you the truth. They don't tell you what is going on. They have 100,000 excuses for things that you cannot imagine. And what is not really working is just only punishing them. I had a big progress on having a Russian speaking assistant. This guy was presenting asshole in 20 versions in their mother language when there was something that was not perfect. that was his special skill, yeah. And I provided just the technical background and he translated to that what they are used to.
This guy working for you, he was in Crimea or he was in...
He was working with me in Austria and because they have this typical chain structure. There's one guy who is responsible to report to another guy at the next level. I remember one guy was only responsible to forward the commands from the top level to exactly one guy below him. Really, really, really useful, important jobs. Yeah.
Yeah. I love this because we focus on the latest technologies for monitoring and getting the most out of a PV plant. But actually, it sounds like it's just
the problem. The problem was
to be able to swear at people in their native language is also a very useful asset.
It is quite funny if you have a theoretical number of 0.35% optimization potential on power clipping by unbalancing an inverter. It is nice, yeah, and it is high scientific, and it is that where we met, for instance, on PVSEC or so, where I presented all these methodologies. But in the real life, it is total other way around. I did not the classical style like it was in Eastern Europe on rough commands. I did it with workshops where I explained the guys the background, where we made a lot of funny social meetings. I was as the top head. I was on the same table with the poorest civil worker and explained them what it means that we are producing clean energy and all that stuff. So I took care that they get all this motivation that is necessary to do the job.
Right. Yeah? Right.
But on a level that they understand it.
Right.
Yeah, and then 2014 came and Crimea got lost. Also, the direct contact to the Ukrainian team was then reduced, but only my team, it was split up to an extra company with 7 or 8 guys from Vienna. I kept control over the plants, and we got also money to develop the tools that they are usable not only on our plants. Yeah.
Right.
Based on this, we got in contact to India, where at this time the first 100 megawatt units came up, the world's largest, now world's largest PV plant. This is 2.7 or 2.8 gigawatt in the meantime. Mm-hmm. India have total different approaches, total different faults than we had in Crimea. I did it also for European plants. 30 plants in Italy.
Okay, so you were in a small Austrian company which had developed software tools to be doing monitoring of PV plants.
And, not monitoring, analytics. We took the data from the monitoring and ran their special algorithms on top of monitoring. It is mostly based on timelines and comparison. And the trick is that you have to find out what you are allowed to compare.
Okay. And so what monitoring data was being fed into your analytics program?
We preferred to work with 1 minute production data of every string. And then the next level is then to get the collected production data of the combiner boxes. And at this time, string inverters were not very common. And then the next level is then the input and the output of the inverter, then checking by AC-DC side of the inverter at every time you get then the efficiency curves and they got then the deviation on the efficiency curves so that we could detect on really early time upcoming problems with the inverter where capacitors have to be changed after 10 years and so on. Also the a premature degradation localized to the string where we got it on the numbers. And then we sent out the guys, and really on these five strings out of 10,000 that I told them, there was significant browning. So that was really, really amazing.
Let's drill into that. So you were able to identify not just strings that weren't working, but you were also capable of seeing a degradation or underperforming, slightly underperforming strings.
Yeah, yeah. In 0.5% accuracy. And based on this, then also the effects of soiling, forgotten grass cutting.
I guess one of the big problems that hit the industry maybe 5-6 years ago was PID.
Yeah.
Were you able to detect PID or isolate that, or how much?
We could detect patterns that fit really good to PID. And to be honest, I didn't have too much plans with really PID. PID was around PVSEC and on the scientific part and in the laboratories. In my opinion, it was blown up more than it was really in the fields. There were some plants with significant PID. And if you have the unlucky situation to have one of these megawatts where this impacted, it's bad for you. But in relation to that, what I've seen, and I've seen in the meantime more than 4 gigawatts of plants. And on this 4 gigawatt that I've seen, there were maybe 10, 20 megawatt of really PID. And it stopped then. It stopped then, I think, at least 2020.
Okay. The manufacturers started to get on top of it.
They started to get on top of it. The encapsulation was getting better also. And a lot of faults are infected at the end of the string where the tension to ground is higher. These models get more infected than models that are at lower tension. So if you have a string with 20 or 25 models or whatever, usually PID and also some other effects of premature degradation take usually place on the first models of the string.
Right.
And we got this relatively nice under control, changing only these two or three models there and taking care that you do not mix up the model type and all that stuff. So we did some kind of cannibalization, we called it. We put all bad models in one string and took only two or three good models and replaced it on the location where it was. We had really significant PID. And we compensated with one cheap device because PID had also the lucky situation when you run current in the opposite direction, you can repair up to 80%.
Yeah.
You can recover up to 80%. Mm. And we did this on this double strategy. We made this cannibalization, put all the bad models in isolated strings and ran on these bad ones, these healing devices. We call them healing devices.
And, I think they put them at like a high positive voltage or something.
You put them on a high positive voltage. And then they changed a few thousand models and it is now a standard procedure and that's it.
So that was interesting. So now, so you built the company with this analytics software. Or can you talk about the adoption of other inspection techniques like, you know, infrared cameras on drones? Or now we're starting to see outdoor photoluminescence. Can you give your perspective on some of these other inspection tools that are coming out?
Yeah, this coming up is not the correct word because they are already at industrial standard. Mm. It's nice. It is also nice to convince anyone that there are some locations where really fault. What I could observe is that the pictures coming from the infrared camera have to be digested very carefully because the infrared picture is a snapshot. It is a snapshot at the time and it doesn't tell you really much. It is an indicator really often if you have really problems with models, for instance, it helps you to localize bad models in strings, but it is only the highlighted location is not enough. I have seen a lot of hotspots coming just from stupid bird shits.
Mm. Yeah.
If you have then smooth pictures, it calms also the banks. So
how do you mean? Sorry.
It keeps the banks the financing partner.
Oh, I see.
It keeps them cool because they see you've done something. Nobody understands what's really going on, but you have nice colored pictures. And because it's a different world, they are not from our position as a technician. It is quite clear you can see really faults, and if you do it in laboratory on models where you have it, it is a great technology. Mm-hmm. If you run it over the plants, it gives you a nice overview. But you cannot even compare two different pictures because different weather situation, you have different results. You cannot guarantee that you have 3 months or later the same weather situation that you have on your last check.
Mm, right.
Yeah.
How do you see PV plant owners, operators using drone IR images at the moment? Impression of the degradation over time.
You do not get this in really utility scale plants because it is always from the asset owner cost benefit calculation. How many faults do I really detect on doing all this? Mm-hmm. So what I've seen, there are some contracts that insist on a yearly infrared inspection, and then it is done because it keeps the financing partner cool. From technical perspective, it makes sense as soon as you have really indication that you have a structural problem. Like you have a series of models that have during the production something unserious going on, or the bill of material is not 100% perfect. And based on this, can happen that there are, doesn't matter if it's PID, if it is another premature degradation effect. Then you can localize it, and then you can, it helps you very much on supporting the correction strategy.
So okay, when you say localize it, you mean localize which modules in the plant, or localize it as in knowing what the degradation mechanism is?
No, localizing where you have to do something.
Okay.
The other one is the scientific part, which is necessary. But you have to deal always, a megawatt is 4,000 modules. Making something that lasts a minute a module is not applicable on 500,000 modules. Mm. That's not feasible. But if you have problems and you fly with a drone over it and you get clear definition, usually you have 4, 5, 6, 7 different model types in the real big plants, and I'm talking here about 50 megawatts or more, then you can localize, for instance, which production lot, because the production lots are then localized in various zones. Okay. It helps you to get then the claim in a more specific way so that you can handle it up.
Actually, I'm glad you mentioned that. I wanted to ask you about that. What have you seen about a PV plant owner wanting to do a warranty claim for underperforming modules? Because I think there's a classic understanding that it's very hard to convince a module manufacturer that their product is below warranty.
That's reality. There is not very much to add on it. But it is a classical game, yeah? If you are in the position of a manufacturer, you're trying always to find out everything for the underperformance that is not coming from your product. Yeah,
right.
That is the handling. If the handling is not done very properly, if you find out that there are a lot of unusual cracks in the models, then the model manufacturer is telling you it was not transported and mounted like we and all that stuff. And then I think a First Solar story is the most impressive one here.
So which story? I didn't quite catch the name.
First Solar, the Series 2 model.
Yeah,
I think everyone knows the situation. These thin film models, which had bigger degradation than originally wanted, let's say. And First Solar is a strong company, and they accepted that the models are underperforming. but you have to prove it on sending them to a laboratory, and the laboratory had then in a special procedure explain yes it is or it is not. And everyone was then getting some kind of fear, because for sure not every model that was sent into the laboratories was a really bad one, because nobody could localize the model by themselves. And here we came then up with our analytics and localized at least a string, which one of these 100 models that you have on this data channel is really bad, and then to find out which one of 20,000 it is. Yeah. The last 2 years I was CTO of Enery. Here we localized bad models in two of the plants we bought. We bought 25 plants in the Czech Republic, a portfolio of 75 megawatt. So there were plants from a few hundred kilowatt up to biggest one, I think 8 or 9 megawatt one plant. So spread all over the country, each plant a different technology, 5 different types of inverters, mixed up zinc film and crystalline. And here we had two plants where it was to bring up warranty claims. The detection is not that hard. The paperwork and all the legal stuff around it.
Well, when you say the detection wasn't that hard, they were underperforming.
Underperforming, localized by monitoring data, infrared picture for double check. And based on this, then sending out a technician, doing a local measurement of the single models was not really a problem. But the logistics were really challenging. And
are you using IV curve tracers in the field to try
and
get more evidence that the modules are underperforming? These are useful?
It is useful, but it is a very alternative, because it lasts very long per model. So you cannot do it on preventive activities, because the number of models is too big. So if you have already the suspect that there is something wrong, then all these techniques that we know from our friends on the science side, then all this without any excuse make sense. But in wild field, you have to take care that it is either generated automatically and you detect it on the monitoring system, or it lasts only a few seconds per model.
Right.
Yeah. You can also add artificial intelligence on special pattern, but here you have then the issues with shit in and shit out. So you have not enough samples for training. I tested more than 100 algorithms, and a lot of these algorithms, and we classified it then in 5 different types. These algorithms are really working as soon as you have verified input data to train it. And that verified input data to train it is the problem. Otherwise, it is just confusing.
So you're training it on power production data or on images?
Both. Mm.
Yeah. How good are the inverters now at identifying faults?
One, what I appreciate very, very much is the trend on the inverter going to this big string inverters, because it reduces the skills that you need on the field technicians.
By it large is, string inverters, you
this 150, 180 kilowatt inverters. Yeah, these checks on isolation fault and all that stuff. That's quite nice that is there. Yeah, and coming back to this semi big inverters. They are really nice because they are easy to handle. There are only change the whole thing and forget the rest, and you have a black box. And if something is broken, it is, let's say, a digestible portion of the whole plant. And you have then the whole inverter there, because it is not too expensive to have a whole inverter or two and spare, but then you do not have to change single stacks by yourself in big inverters like we had 10 years ago.
Okay, and a nice size, because they're small enough that you can have a few spares and swap them immediately when you need to.
And they are big enough to run really efficient.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise, if you go, for instance, to the string inverters that have 10 or 20 kilowatt, you have then so many inverters all over the plant. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the number of inverters is then too big.
Yeah. I've got one more technology I wanted to ask you about, which is outdoor photoluminescence. There's been such scientific advances made in this in the past 1 or 2 years, and I know there's companies in Germany that are offering this. What's your impression and experience of outdoor PL?
I've seen this year on PVSEC that we are here in the technology that makes a step on being used on a wide area, like infrared imaging was 2-3 years ago. So I think this is an upcoming technology for wide area use.
Are you aware of it being
It will come. It will come. There are the one or the other who are trying it. I would say it will last 2-3 years, and then it gets used. It get used as a standard product.
So far, we've kind of talked a lot about utility scale. What about smaller systems like residential, commercial, for these guys who are not having sophisticated service providers keeping an eye on their PV plants? Like,
don't underestimate this, the private owners. They are all really proud of that, what they have. Most of them are observed even better than this medium-sized, because it is the private money that is there, and every kilowatt hour that you get down from a rooftop is a success story. So the private people are getting more and more freaks. They keep the models clean. They check out if a string is not working properly. All the information that the web platforms of the home monitoring, the inverters send to, are observed and watched. And based on this, these people are doing the right things.
What are the biggest mistakes when it comes to operating ground mount PV systems?
One thing is that the relatively rapid growth of the plants coming to megawatt units, the companies who did this, most of them did it really professional. There were a lot of things like mounting system not perfectly done, or someone wants to do not spend so much money. I've seen, for instance, a 42 megawatt plant in Ukraine where I had to change 330,000 clamps for model fixing because during the construction they find out that someone is producing these clamps with only 2 millimeters of aluminium and that they are cheaper by 10 cents or so a piece. But when the first wind came, then the statics did not succeed. What I've seen is on the cabling, same plant, the big cables coming with 200 amperes from the combiner to the inverters, and they put in the bricks that you have usually on fixing the railway rails. So these granite blocks, and put them directly on the cable. And then we had a 4-hour cable fire under the earth with 4,000 degrees. The cables were digging to the ground, and you should fill up a sand, and they put in granite bricks because nobody sees it when you close it.
Right on top of the cable.
You're right on top of the cable, yes. When the service car passed by, it cracked the cable, and then there was a micro gap, and then this micro gap is at 200 ampere. You have then a spark, and this spark is then burning. Another one, you should fill in the sand, and then you should fill in other material that makes it a bit dense. And they were also too lazy to make it like the rules. And they had on the opposite side, they had only fine sand, yeah? And this plant is on a hill. And in the first thunderstorm, all cables were washed out. I've seen this also in Britain, where they have problems with really filling the cable trays. But this is under control in the meantime. In newer plants, you cannot see such faults.
Are there any other examples you can give like this where you took over a PV plant and you looked at the performance data and you found things to fix?
The whole big story in India is the finding out the optimum soiling.
Cleaning
procedure on the soiling that you have there. A big owner was really proud because his plant have the perfect PR, and there is no need for cleaning because I have the perfect PR. The only fault he did not clean the pyranometer also. So
that's going to make the PV look pretty good.
I did always the double check then on reliability of the measurements. And the reliability of the measurement was quite clear. I took the satellite data and had 25% higher irradiation than measured on the plant.
25%. Okay, well, that's you can spot that.
Setting a cleaning procedure on that helped dramatically. The worst case, the worst thing that we had is on an Indian plant with snakes.
Snakes? What were the snakes doing? I'm sorry. Were they just snakes or they were actually causing a specific problem?
The specific problem was a dead cleaning personnel.
They would bite people.
Oh, shit. They bite. We had a dead one from the cleaning team. That was the worst.
He died. Oh my gosh.
He died. It was absolutely crazy to detect. This is a 20 megawatt plant somewhere in the middle of India. And we could see on the monitoring that we have random broken modules somewhere in the plants, and we could not think where are these broken modules coming from. We recognized that based on the cleaning plan that we have to clean here every 2 weeks, an area of 2 megawatt was not cleaned anymore. Mm-hmm. And then the guy said, "Yes, we had a guy who was bit by a snake. We did not clean because we had the funeral."
Oh my God.
And that is really heavy. Mm-hmm. And then we checked out what was the reason. We had their snakes that came out in the night, but some stupid said, okay, when you're cleaning the models, you make a shadow. And by cleaning the models, when you're in the afternoon, you make no shadow on the models, so you have to clean in the afternoon. The other one is in the hot temperature in India. During high noon, you should not clean because of the temperature shock. If you spray water on it, then you have 20 degrees or 30 degrees less. But you can avoid this. And so they had the procedure to clean in the night, but in the night were the poisonous snakes out. And right. When the snakes came out, this tiny Indian jumped on the models. And even a 40 kilo.
Gosh.
Yeah, because run for your life, yeah.
Oh, shit. So you were seeing broken modules because the workers would jump up away from the snakes. Oh, my gosh.
And they told it to no one because they were too proud.
And that was the
problem. The information was not there. And then we analyzed the whole procedure and we changed this plant, explaining them the snakes were only in the night active. So during the day, there is no risk of these snakes in this area. So put your cleaning time during the morning and afternoon hours and leave the plant at least half an hour after sundown.
Right.
And we had no broken models anymore. We had clean models there and we had not anyone hurt by a snake at this plant.
That
was the most dramatic one.
Yeah, well, that's one to be proud of, yeah. Was there anything else you would particularly want to mention, or are you happy to wrap it up there?
What I wanted to mention is the integration to whole energy systems. You know, this story that the grid is overloaded. If you combine, for instance, wind at the same grid feeding points with PV,
right.
So there is a composite profile, and I was really surprised to do a 100 megawatt analysis last week's for an Austrian location, and you lose only 12% on a 100 megawatt wind farm adding at the same feeding point a 100 megawatt PV. That's amazing.
You lose 12%.
Only of the maximum possible PV production.
Oh, I see. By incorporating wind into the same land area, so you're
in the same in the same area. I put wind on top. I took PV on top of a wind farm. Use the same feeding point, so the grid is not cut then on the maximum capacity of the feeding point.
I see.
So when the wind is running half and is delivering 30-40 megawatt. TV is delivering 60 megawatt, up to 60 megawatt. So it fills up the 100 megawatt. And I was absolutely surprised that it is only 12% that there is the loss here. And if you combine it then, for instance, with With buffer, you can even buffer this 12%, so you lose nothing.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. I think yeah. You are now more or less full, huh?
Yeah, that's absolutely fantastic. Thank you so much for your time. It was really a pleasure talking with you. You take care.
Bye, Ben. See you then.